February 12th, 2015. This is the Hermetic Hour. I'm your host, Pope Runyon. And tonight we present a discussion on the late medieval Dutch surrealist painter Hieronymus Bosch, whose remarkable works have not yet become the secret code behind a Dan Brown novel, and that's a hint, Brother Dan, but would certainly provide a great background for such a story. Now, his most famous work, The Garden of Earthly Delights, is a phantasmagoria of bizarre and nightmarish symbolism, which scholars relate to the Gnostic sect of the Adamites, a cult of mystic nudists who were trying to recreate the Garden of Eden on Earth. At that time, super Catholic Spain had taken over the Netherlands, and in those days, the Spanish Inquisition was burning the Dutch Adamites as fast as Bosch could paint them. But the King of Spain was Bosch's biggest fan, which probably kept him alive. So, if you can Google some of Bosch's artwork at the same time you're listening, that'll be if you can do that, you're going to see some beautiful work, because the computer reproductions that I've been looking at are really, really, really good. So anyway, let's get on into it. Now, I'm sitting here in my lap. I have a book that must be, this book must weigh at least 7 pounds. It's Bosch, and it's by Wilhelm Frager, that's Frager, and it's published by Putnam, and this is this one's been out for about 30 years, but this is supposed to be the most authoritative book on Bosch, and Wilhelm Frager has probably the best analysis of Bosch and what he was doing. Now, according to Wikipedia, Hieronymus Bosch was born Hieronymus or Johan, respectively, Van Aken. That's A-K-E-N, Van Aken. My Aken Bacon. And he signed a number of his paintings as Hieronymus Bosch. He was born around 1450. Now, he was born in 1450 in the Netherlands, but the Spanish ruled most of Holland, at least the southern areas, from about 1433. And so Bosch was born about 1450 and was buried in 1516. So he was flourishing and painting while the Spanish ruled the Netherlands, and of course wherever the Spanish ruled, they were, as I said in the abstract, they were super Catholics, and the Spanish Inquisition, of course, was there. And by the way, for those of you who don't remember, the Spanish Inquisition was not run by the Jesuits, as some people think. It was run by the Dominicans, and they called themselves the Hounds of God, and they mostly dressed in white robes, at least they do now, but I don't know what they did then. We're usually familiar with Monty Python, where they wear aviators' helmets and silly-looking costumes, you know. No one expects the Spanish Inquisition. But at the time when they were in Holland, Europe had a lot of heretical, holdover Gnostic kind of sects that were very, very heretical. You know, this was 14 in the 14 from the 1430s through to the Reformation. Europe was all Catholic, and this is when the witchcraft trials got started, got going. And some of these so-called witches were actually members of heretical sects, and there were some very, very strange heretical Gnostic type sects that were operating at that time. And one of them was called the Adamites, and the Adamites were the ones that Bosch primarily, at least according to Wilhelm Frager. The Adamites were Bosch's primary subjects and models and his main subject matter, especially for the Garden of Earthly Delights. And the Adamites, their belief was that if they could recreate the Garden of Eden before the fall, before Eve ate the apple and ran into the snake and ate the apple, that they could all return to innocence. And now you can see this in the Garden of Earthly Delights, and I don't know how many of you are looking at it right now, but if you're looking at it, in the middle, you see all of the little Adamites, running around in the all together in the nude and what have you, and they're being very affectionate, but they're not in flagrante delicto. You don't see any Adamites actually doing anything sexual. This is not like that Walt Disney, you remember the cartoon that got sneaked out of Walt Disney, where all of the Disney characters were up to no good. Well, this isn't that way. All of these little nude figures are being affectionate, but they're not being naughty. And the Adamites, according to their one aspect of their philosophy, was that if they returned to the innocence, returned to childlike innocence before Eve ran into the snake and ate the apple, that they could recover their sanctity, and they'd be in touch with God, and they'd be innocent. So they were supposedly, according to that theory, the Adamites were supposed to be pretty much celibate, and so whatever whenever they rubbed up against each other, it was strictly platonic. Well, that's one theory. The other theory, of course, the theory that the church had, was that they were having orgies and what have you. They were also, in a way, kind of connected to some degree with another sect, which was an early version of Satanism called the Luciferians. And the Luciferians, they also had a kind of a curious belief. They believed that if they could get underground, if they get down underground, and they met in caverns, and if they could get down underground, that God couldn't see them, and they could do anything they wanted, and so they did that, and they would have group gropes underground and blow out the candles, and everybody would grab whoever was nearby or whatever. So that was the Luciferians, and supposedly the Adamites, according to their critics anyway, did the same sort of thing, but actually, not according to the way Bosch painted them. The way he painted them, they were certainly innocent. Now, look at the Garden of Earthly Delights, those of you who can look at it. You notice over on the left-hand side, you have Jesus and Adam standing between Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Now, then in the middle, you have all the Adamites all dancing around, having a grand time in the open, and they have a big pool. They have all sorts of strange combinations of plants and animals and people in a very surrealistic mode, which which had a lot of influence for later surrealistic painters like Salvador Dali and others. But in this in the center, this was thought to be the paradise of the Adamites. Now, over there on the right, we have a nightmarish panel on the right-hand side with all these horrible visions of apocalyptic destruction and torture and everything, and all this awful stuff over on the right. Now, Prager got to analyzing this, the general thought was that the one on the left was Jesus and Adam and Eve represented creation. The one in the middle represented the paradise of the Adamites, and the one on the right represented hell. And that was the original theory. But Wilhelm Prager, he disputes that. He says that the one on the left with Jesus and Adam and Eve, that does represent creation. And the one in the middle is the paradise of the Adamites. But the one on the right, the nightmarish one, on the right, that panel represents the world as it is. That was his theory, because, of course, in those days, as we all know, life was nasty, brutish, and short. Well, anyway, this triptych, and I have a reproduction of it, which I mounted. It would hinged very much like the old triptych. And I got it sitting up on top of my entertainment center. In front of it, I have the intergravitron, which, you know, is our old interdimensional access machine. This would be, and I've thought about this numerous times, that this triptych would be a terrific inducement to an astral projection. If you could use this thing as a window to project into this strange world, and this is one of the reasons why I said in the abstract that this Bosch's work would make an excellent subject for a Dan Brown type novel. I would personally make it some sort of a doorway to project into this strange dimension, strange environment. And at one time, Zandria and I kicked around the idea of doing a comic book based on scenes from Earthly Delights and some other Bosch work. And what we thought we might do with this is to take these different tableaus and scenes of these strange creatures and all, and put balloons, have comic strip type balloons, and then in those balloons for text, we would use James Joyce's lines from Finnegan's Wake, which is, you know, is a kind of a gibberish novel. It's supposed to be world class literature gibberish, but it's still gibberish. And that this would be quite a thing, where we could take these tableaus from Earthly Delights and use. So it's artwork. It's a comic book. It's artwork by Hieronymus Bosch and written by James Joyce. And that would really be a mind bender. And we thought then we could perhaps get it translated into Arabic, and they could use it to torment Al Qaeda prisoners in Guantanamo. That would be interesting. But anyway, we never got too far with that project. I think the thing though that we really want to talk about here with Bosch is that Bosch was not only was he presenting the Adamite view and philosophy and in favor of the Adamites, obviously, but he was also a satirist. He was a satirist like a political cartoonist today. And he was a wonderful draftsman, and produced terrific character studies. But he was a satirist, and he satirized the church. And you know, you'll go You'll find nuns dressed, you'll find pig-like creatures dressed in nuns' habits and all kinds of, very, very satirical pieces, artwork on satirizing and lampooning the church. And the church apparently enjoyed that. Now here's the thing. Bosch was painting these heretics and detailing their visions, and at the same time, the Spanish Inquisition was arresting these people and burning them at the stake, and this was going on all over the place. Meanwhile, however, the King of Spain, Philip II, the King of Spain at that time, was Bosch's biggest fan, and he had his agents going around confiscating every bit of Bosch's work, because the King of Spain, even though he was, supposed to be his most Catholic Majesty, and he was he wasn't subsidizing the Inquisition, the Church, they were stealing enough to subsidize themselves. Though he was giving them, of course, a license to steal. But the king just really had a secret love of Bosch's rather erotic and rather shocking and rather satirical and you can't call it pornography, because as I say, none of his little Adamites were ever doing anything really wrong, but it certainly, they were all naked and they were all obviously enjoying themselves, and there was a lot of other shocking stuff going on, and so in the sense of Philip the King, yes, it, you could call it pornography. In his case, it certainly was, but he even had one of these nightmarish Bosches in his bedroom, and he spent hours and hours meditating on it. Now, whether he was doing this out of guilt for launching the Inquisition on Holland, I keep thinking, remember the wooden shoes that the Dutch people wore? God, I wonder what the Inquisition did with that. Put spikes in them. Did you see the Inquisition driving nails through Dutch wooden shoes? Oh God! Or stuffing people's fingers in the dike or whatever, Anyway, the Inquisition had a field day going after these Adamites and, of course, Luciferians and these various heretics. While Bosch was painting them, and the king was collecting all these, as many of these paintings as he could, And who knows what he was secretly doing with them, except that obviously he was fascinated by them. And this was one of these things that you can see an analogy today. People who the censors, the old joke about the censors, they just watched a movie and then they say, let's watch it again before we ban it. But anyway, Bosch's work is phenomenal, and it is very, very magical, very mystical. There's a lot of hermetic symbolism in it, according to Wilhelm Painter, and you look at all these different tableaus and the things that these people are doing, and the strange combinations of beasts and human beings, and it really is highly imaginative, and very thought provoking. So I think that in many ways, Bosch's artwork should really be studied in a sense that of hermetic symbolism, in alchemical symbolism, and there certainly is a lot in it, and you can spend a lot of time studying it. I still think, though, however, that the main thing that I would find so fascinating about this is, are we looking at some sort of another dimension here? And could we possibly project into this, use it perhaps as a path working, somehow or other project ourselves into this strange, bizarre world of his? Also, Bausch was into a couple of things here. One, I want to mention that there's one of the details where he was into what we call diversity. He had a couple of very attractive black girls mixed in with the white folks that predominate. And also, there's one of the things that really fascinates me is if you go to the triptych and you get over to the side where Jesus is standing between Adam and Eve, and if you look down, those of you who can find this particular thing where you're looking, if you got the triptych on here. I'm trying to find it in Wilhelm's book here, and I'm going to have to go to this smaller reproduction here that I have in the thing from Wikipedia. Okay, now, if you find Jesus standing between Adam and Eve, and you want to look down right below them, there's a pool. And one of the weird things about this is you have here a presage of Darwin's evolution. You have these creatures, aquatic creatures, crawling up out of this pool and evolving from the amphibian phase on into walking animals. And this can't be anything else but a representation of evolution. And yet here we are, this is in the 1460s and 70s. And you can find all sorts of this kind of symbolism, both Darwinian and Freudian, and all through this artwork. So this is, in many, many ways, this is really something that's worthy of a great deal of study and meditation, and a great deal of hermetic contemplation. And I think the alchemical symbolism is really marvelous. As you're looking over here, I've got one that I'm looking at one where there's a man and a woman inside of a transparent egg, in a transparent sphere, and that transparent sphere is sitting on top of a round red sort of a gourd, with a man inside it looking out through a clear glass tube. And you have we have a man leaning over a couple of other guys, and he has what looks like a strawberry with a tail on it, and the tail has what looks like a spike on it, and then we have the guy looking out of the tube has a rat. There's a rat in the tube crawling toward him. Then there's this fellow with an oyster on his back, and with a guy inside the oyster, and he's carrying the oyster on his back. We have over in the center of the Garden of Delights, up there toward the pool in the center, we have a whole bunch of nude fellows riding on horses and on pigs and on oxen, and they're riding all these different kind of animals, and this kind of symbolism goes on and on and on and on and on, and you kind of wonder if you studied all this enough, and then you could somehow project yourself into this strange environment. Wouldn't that be fascinating? Well, I think maybe in a way, or there might be some sort of a magical operation where you could do that, or maybe perhaps that's what was originally intended with this. And if it was, it would be quite an adventure to be able to actually put yourself into this environment. I think that Hieronymus Bosch is really a fascinating subject from the Hermetic point of view, because there is so much magical symbolism and mythical symbolism, magical symbolism, and alchemical symbolism involved in this artwork. So therefore, the study of it is really worthwhile. And, you know, and when you're thinking, too, about what the way he is surrealistically representing the horrors and the persecutions of his own time, and the strange situation with the King of Spain, who on the one hand supporting the destruction of these very same people that Bosch was presenting is a fascinating paradox. So, in many, many ways, I think that that Bosch's work, especially the Garden of Earthly Delights, is a wonderful subject, and this is a wonderful subject, and I encourage everybody to take a good look at this artwork and look at it from a Hermetic point of view. And this is going to be kind of short tonight because I don't have any much more that I can talk about. And I could talk a lot more if we had the graphics up. Now, some of you are able to look at that, and I could talk about that a lot more next week. Hopefully, I have a couple of books ordered coming that hopefully I'll be here before next week, and I'll want to review those. A couple of magic books. So next week I'll see you, and we'll get into a couple of old grimoires that have been republished. And until then, good magic.